Hello, this is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 29, and today I wanted to talk about fine motor skills in kids. This is something that all occupational therapists know a lot about. It is kind of known as our thing historically. And speaking of history, let me give you a little history lesson of occupational therapy in the United States. Before I do that, let me give you the definition of occupational therapy, as defined by Wikipedia. It is the use of assessment and intervention to develop, recover, or maintain the meaningful activities or occupations of individuals, groups, or communities. In 1917, the National Society for the Promotion of Occupational Therapy was founded, and they officially named occupational therapy as a profession in 1920. This National Society for the Promotion of Occupational Therapy was renamed to the American Occupational Therapy Association, or AOTA for short, a few years later. And this is still the name of the association that we use today in the United States. The purpose of the AOTA is to represent the interests and concerns of occupational therapy practitioners and students, and improve the quality of occupational therapy services, according to their website. The AOTA currently has approximately 60,000 members, which include OTs, occupational therapy assistants, and occupational therapy students. Aspects of the profession of occupational therapy started well before these organizations did, though. Back in 100 BCE, a Greek physician used massage, therapeutic baths, exercise, and music to treat patients with mental illness. He was an advocate for patients with mental illness and believed in treating them humanely during a time where this was not necessarily the common strategy. He got many patients with mental illness out of confined treatment settings and treated them using massage and diet strategies, among other things. He was not the first person to use music in a therapeutic way, but was the first known person to use music as a treatment with people who had a mental illness. During the late 18th century, there were some physicians who started to change the way hospitals were treating patients. They started a model of moral treatments, where they stopped using things like metal chains to restrain people and started using things like work and leisure activities as treatments. This type of philosophy was more prevalent in Europe at this time, and took a while longer for the U.S. to catch up on these ideas. During the late 1800s to early 1900s, the arts and crafts movement happened internationally. This was a time where many people worked in factories, and arts and crafts was one outlet for them to be creative and make things using their own imagination, since their factory jobs didn't accommodate that. Also, people that were sick often spent a long time in the hospital trying to recover, and arts and crafts were incorporated with them as a way to keep them from getting bored, but also to keep up morale. This reinforced an overriding occupational therapy theme of learning by doing. During World War I in the United States, occupational therapy aides were hired by the U.S. Army Medical Department to assist with treatment and recovery times of wounded soldiers. A pair of orthopedic physicians started this trend and pushed for the U.S. Army to follow along. They worked at the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., and saw the need for what they called, at the time, reconstruction aides. This was a term that included OTs and physical therapists. Most of these aides were females due to the large number of men that had gone to fight in the war and were either still at war or were injured, so they were sent back to the U.S. and were receiving treatment in the hospitals. They used the ideas from the arts and crafts movement in addition to the use of purposeful activities to help the soldiers recover from their injuries. The ultimate goals were to find ways to use meaningful occupations to get these men back to where they could either rejoin the fight in the war or recover enough to be able to continue working as a civilian and support the U.S. economy and their families. Meaningful occupations were things that each person was interested in, things that they liked to do for fun, in addition to things they would need to be able to do again in order to get a job and support their family, or continue their efforts fighting in the war. This was a pretty big deal at the time because It was a time in history where women weren't really employed that often. After the wartime ended, there was less of a need for the aides to work in this specific capacity. AOTA was instrumental at this time in making the profession of occupational therapy more standardized and finding ways to show how we could continue to help people recover or maintain their occupations or meaningful activities from other injuries, not just war injuries. In the following years, the profession was set up to be more standardized, and OT schools were established to ensure that these standards were being taught across the board. So, as you can tell, the history of occupational therapy in the U.S. is largely credited to World War I and the need for people to help work with a large number of wounded soldiers. The idea was to use functional activities as well as fun activities to help those injured soldiers recover. These are the same principles we use today, only we now recognize that not just people with injuries can benefit from this philosophy. Any person who is having difficulty participating in their daily routines or their occupations can benefit from occupational therapy. To tie this into fine motor skills, which is supposed to be the actual topic for today, this historically came out of the arts and crafts movement as well, because you use your hands and fine motor coordination to do arts and crafts activities. Back in the day, it was a lot of leather making, wallets and pouches and things. So, while our focus a lot of times with kids today is on their fine motor skills, this is not because fine motor skills in themselves are so important, but it's more the idea or question of how their fine motor skills are affecting their ability to participate in their daily life. Are they having difficulty with doing their occupations? For kids, it's playing, eating, getting dressed, and so on, because they're having trouble with their fine motor coordination. And what is fine motor coordination anyway? Well, it is using the smaller muscles in your hands and fingers in a coordinated way. This is often combined with your hands and fingers and your eyes all working together. Although this is not always the case, as people who are visually impaired can still have good fine motor skills. Also, part of the fine motor skill involves times when we are not using our vision, even for people with sight. For example, you reach into your pocket to find a quarter, but you have many different coins already in your pocket, in addition to your keys and a paperclip or some other random things. You are using a fine motor skill to figure out which one is the quarter without actually looking down into your pocket. On the other side of this, being able to use both your hands and eyes to complete tasks can make things easier. So for kids, it is important to work on these things and give them opportunities to practice. Fine motor skills for using both hands in coordination with each other, called bilateral coordination, is very important. This is a skill we use for our whole lives. With bilateral coordination, sometimes both hands are doing the exact same thing at the same time. For example, clapping your hands. Both hands come together at the same time and move apart at the same time, if both sides are equal, that is. But the general idea is they are doing the same movement. However, sometimes one hand is doing one thing and the other hand is doing something else, although usually related to the same activity. This is what we see with kids who are stringing beads, for example. You hold the string with one hand and place the bead on the string with the opposite hand. They are doing two different jobs but working on the same activity. In older kids and adults, we use the same skill to thread a needle for sewing. We all need to sew a button back on a shirt at some point in our lives, right? This activity is interesting because it involves both hands doing different things and coordinates not only hand and eyes, but information is crossing over between both sides of their brain, which allows both hands to work together at the midline or middle of your body. Midline is the place on your body where if you're standing up and you draw a line right down from the top of your head to your feet, it would cut your right and left sides of your body in half. We talk about midline a lot because we're working on brain development with children who are still learning and growing. Many times, kids with special needs have some issues with brain development, and we see this when they have trouble crossing midline using their hands. The information from the left side of your brain tells your right hand what to do, and vice versa. So if your brain is not working like it should, you will have a lot of trouble getting both hands to work together for fine motor skills. Of course, crossing midline doesn't just affect fine motor skills, but that is what I'm focusing on today. Just think about crawling, walking, or running to give you some ideas of what else is affected by that. Another bilateral skill in kids, and adults actually, is handwriting, and also scissor skills. For writing, you often need to hold the paper down with one hand and write on the paper with the opposite hand. This is a bilateral skill, but also the handwriting in itself is a fine motor skill. The hand-eye coordination is needed for forming the actual letters or pictures on the paper. Same with scissors for bilateral coordination. You hold the paper with one hand and cut it with the opposite hand. With crossing midline, the act of actually reaching across your body, so physically crossing the midline of your body with one hand, is another fine motor and could be considered a gross motor skill as well. An obvious example of this is drawing on a large chalkboard or whiteboard. I know this doesn't happen in schools much anymore, but we all understand what this looks like, so I will go ahead and use it as an example. If you stand in one place and using your right hand to draw a line across the board or write a sentence from left to right, keeping your feet still, face the board, you reach across your body and start writing and continue writing all the way across to your right side. This is physically crossing midline. We want to be able to do this because it shows that both sides of the brain are working together. I see a lot of kids who have issues with crossing midline. I see this in many different ways. One is they will position their body so that they are always using one hand to do activities, but they never actually cross the midline. For example, if a child is walking around the room picking up toys to put away in a box, they will walk up to the toy and stand just to the left of it, then bend down and pick it up using their right hand. They bring it over to the box and put it away using their right hand as well. This continues for each toy they pick up, never using their left hand to get them and never standing to the right of the toy and reaching across to pick it up with their right hand. Now, if I were to hold their right hand, they may or may not reach for the toy with their left hand instead. Sometimes kids will automatically reach with their left hand, and I don't worry about them as much. However, other kids will pull their right hand away from mine, and so they can use that one to get the toy, or they will be okay with holding my hand, and they will use their left hand instead, but only after I give that left hand or arm a little touch just to make them aware of it. Another thing I would try is to allow them to use their right hand, but I would position the toy on the floor on their left side, or at least to the left of their midline. Then I encourage them to reach for the toy. Sometimes what I will see is they will reach for the toy now using their left hand. This is a concern for me as well because they are just using the arm on the same side where the toy is positioned. However, if they go ahead and reach for the toy with their right hand, I feel a little better about their ability to physically reach across the midline. In this situation, the child may just be right hand dominant, but they could also not necessarily have issues with crossing midline, at least to the left side with their right hand, but they might have issues with crossing the left hand to the right side. This is still something to work on and try to strengthen the connections in the brain through repetition of picking up toys from the right side of their body using their left hand. In these situations, we're not trying to make kids be ambidextrous where they can use both hands exactly the same, but we are trying to make sure both sides of the brain are stimulated and making connections with the opposite side. We have to remember that all of our actions originate in our brain. If something is not working as it should be in our brain, then it will affect our motor skills, among other things. Fine motor skills are not just handwriting, stringing beads, and picking up toys, though. With kids, we tend to focus on manipulative toys for fine motor coordination skills. This is appropriate for their age, and they are generally fun things to do, like putting shapes in a shape sorter, or doing puzzles, or putting pegs in a pegboard, or playing with Play-Doh, just to name a few. The bigger picture here is how fine motor skills are necessary for the rest of our lives. To be independent, functional adults, it will be helpful to have ironed out any fine motor issues, or as much as possible, when we're little and our brains are still susceptible to changing. We need to be able to remove the lid from the toothpaste. manage buttons and zippers on our clothing, put our shoes on and tie them, cut up food with a knife and a fork, cook meals by holding the pot handle with one hand and stirring the food with the opposite hand so the hot food doesn't go flying off the stove, brushing your hair. This requires the ability to cross your midline to brush the opposite side of your head, rather than needing to switch the brush to the other hand just to get the job done. Of course, there are situations where, for one reason or another, people are only going to be able to use one hand for motor skills. There are many adaptations out there for people who need them. However, in occupational therapy, our purpose is to try and help people either maintain or regain their skills depending on each individual situation. The main point for today is not to get caught up in the idea that OTs only work on handwriting in schools or only work on stringing beads with kids at home. We do work on these things with kids, among many other activities, but we're doing that with a bigger purpose in mind, and that is to give them the foundation for building these fine motor skills and coordination, which will hopefully make the rest of their life easier, at least as far as being able to use their hands to help them maintain or regain their independence. Please check out my website today. It's mymidwesttherapy.com. I will have some activities on there for kids and their fine motor skills. Thank you so much for listening.